Today we're here with Ms. Vijay Gray, a chronic pain patient who is here to tell her story. And with that, I'd like to welcome Ms. Vijay Gray. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me today. It's a pleasure to be here. I wish it was under better circumstances.
For all of us, right? Why don't we start by hearing your story, if you don't mind starting from the beginning and really kind of tracing us through your timeline as a chronic pain patient.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a traditional endometriosis patient who many years didn't know I had endometriosis, was told that it was just bad periods, was told that I just need to toughen up. And I think I was around 25. So I had been going through this like 10 or 11 years when I met a wonderful doctor who specialized in endometriosis. And he finally did a laparoscopy. I had been waiting all those years for a laparoscopy. And when I woke up from surgery, I will never forget this. He took my hand and he said, "You are right. You are riddled with endometriosis." I also had adenomyosis. I also had PCOS. And my uterus was like 4 times the size that it should be. This journey for me culminated in, you know, they started with cauterization, excuse me. Then they moved to excision. Then they ended up doing a TAHBSO, so a total abdominal hysterectomy, bilateral. And, you know, I'm barely 30 at this point. So they don't like to do that unless they really need to. Excuse me. My uterus weighed 4 times the amount that it should have. And what had happened during all of these surgeries, and I'm talking like surgeries back to back to back, is, you know, they can build adhesions. So then they're going in and they're trying to remove adhesions. So it becomes this cyclical situation with me where they're going in, they're excising and they're cauterizing, and then they're removing adhesions. Then they're trying to locate the endometriosis that's on organs, the bowel, deep in the abdominal wall, the kidney, and they can't really do anything about that. So at that point, to make a long story as short as I can, I have so much damage and trauma in my abdominal region that I should have a zipper at this point. Like, it's just going in and cutting adhesions and making more adhesions and cauterizing, and it has just become this nonstop cycle. So I said, no more surgery. I went and saw another specialist at UC Davis post-hysterectomy, and he wrote me a letter and said, some patients have residual endometriosis like this patient because we cannot get the endometriosis that she has out. We're not going to cut it out of the bowel over and over and over. We're not going to be able to do anything else with this abdominal wall situation. Like, it's done. So he was very kind, and he wrote me a letter that basically explained it to the physicians who don't know that sometimes endo can persist post total abdominal hysterectomy and oophorectomy. So I still have that letter to this day. And on top of that, I developed mixed connective tissue disease, trigeminal neuralgia, and interstitial cystitis. So I have quite a slew of illnesses. The thing about my story is, though, for the longest time, I rejected pain treatment. I truly, in my heart, believed that if I went to, I think the specialist at the time was Dr. Redwine. He was the endometriosis specialist. I kept thinking, like, if I went to another expert, that somehow I could outpace the pain and I could outpace my illness. I truly had that like internalized feeling of someday this is going to get better. I'm going to be okay. Excuse me. That didn't work out. I rejected any and all pain treatment. I tried everything. Lupron, Depo, all of it. You name it, I've tried it. And after all those surgeries and me no longer wanting to do any of them, and now I'm developing other stuff. I've got a hyperthyroid. I've got this mixed connective positive ANA stuff going on. I just said, well, what can we do? We've done it. We've done so much surgery. What can we do? And essentially, they looked at me and said nothing. And my OBGYN referred me to pain management. I was hesitant with that at first. And actually, I would say, like, very resistant to taking anything at first. But also, I had lost my entire life. I was a musician. I was very active. I was not doing anything.
Moralization that we create with pain
all the time.
That we have
so I finally
to overcome
started to
it.
Take my opioid pain
it
medication
seems like that
a very
was the
low
case
amount
with
at
you,
the time.
Where being a motivated person, a musician, obviously you have a lot of focus, a lot
it
of
gave
persistence.
Me
so
functionality.
You train yourself to think.
Extremely resistant to it, though.
think a certain way. I would imagine that it's something similar to what you thought about pain at first.
It was. And I do think that's a societal and socialization, though. Some of that came from the years of being undiagnosed with what was going on to me, because I had routinely and consistently been told this is normal.
Yeah.
What you're going through with your cycles is normal. This is not abnormal. So I thought I was weak.
Now that,
and we do have
so
a social pressure, this idea that
no
you
more
can
surgeries,
somehow just
no
overcome
more
pain. You know, pain is weakness leaving the body. Well, then we... Pain patients
were
must
you
be
perceived
immortal.
Differently?
We must be the strongest people on earth. Like, how is that a thing? Like, that doesn't even make sense logically. I'm like, well, then that means I'm Thor, I guess. Like, that doesn't make sense. But yes, I did have that kind of internalized idea and almost ableism.
Let's talk about that, because I think you have a very interesting approach to pain. Many people, not just yourself, but throughout the world, see pain as something to overcome. That if you succumb to
100%.
Your pain, it's a personal failing.
I went from being a patient that I felt like was perceived as somebody who's trying to overcome, like we're talking, to someone who had succumbed. And at first in pain management, now I entered pain management a few years before the 2016 guidelines. So they were very receptive and very willing to work with me. In fact, they offered me far more pain control than I felt I needed, because I was a resistant patient. So I rejected that and started off very low. I was naive. I had no idea I would be locked in on that forever and never be able to move.
Were transitioning
but
to
I was very,
pain
very resistant
were you
that.
Seeing
and I do believe... I felt like doctors were more receptive to me when I was a puzzle to solve. But what was interesting to me is I wasn't giving up on that puzzle. I felt like I had kind of been given up on. So it was this very, like, you know, it's a two-way street. I guess I had some responsibility in that.
It sounds so pejorative.
But still, like, how many surgeries can you do when you're doing surgeries
to
correct surgeries?
That's the experience you felt transitioning into just focusing on your symptoms, your pain, and trying to live a high quality of life as possible by managing your symptoms.
And you know, something I want to point out too, that you tripped this off in my head. Once I had transitioned from, we're no longer going to do Lupron depots and all of these birth controls and all of these surgeries, we're going to do pain management. This is where we're at. The interactions that I had with physicians did change. I did become almost
an
organ,
and I want to contrast
symptom instead of like
two
a whole
parts
person.
Of your medical
and
journey.
I noticed that I
the
spent more time defending my illnesses than we did discussing
that
how we would manage
journey,
them.
When
it was like, well, why did you go this way? Maybe if you would have went this way, it could have been better. And again, I'm someone who wants to work with doctors. I'm very, very, I'm very
that's
agreeable
interesting
person.
You phrase it that way.
But
so
I had some bad
no
experiences during this where
no
I was,
procedure.
I frankly put it frankly, I was reduced to a uterus. A lack of a uterus, an adhesion, and the whole person approach
when you
started
first
to disappear. And I spent more time like trying to defend my need for pain management or things than
and
I ever did actually getting any treatment
getting
or having
right
someone hear me, which just
all
happened
the
in a,
took place, all the
an appointment
happened,
recently.
And now you're transitioning to pain. In both cases, you felt the need to defend or felt the need to overcome a certain disbelief. Were they similar or were they...
I would say having to defend against or basically advocate for myself for pain treatment started to make me understand the severity of my own illness, if that makes any sense. Like having to accept that I am now the advocate, that my medicine had almost become adversarial. And before, I had some OBGYNs that I just cannot speak highly enough about. Like I had some wonderful care team. I've had some bad ones, but I had a couple of people who legitimately were trying to help me. They were trying every cutting edge thing. I had them teaming up with gastro because I have a gastro issue as well. I mean, we had co-surgeries. They were really trying. But once that trying was over and I entered pain management, my new primary care at that time, because mine had moved, now my pain management doctor and any specialist I saw started to become adversarial to me because I'm an opioid pain patient. So I would go
There are
into their office and
distinctions in
spend more
those
time explaining,
experiences.
this is how I got here, though. You are not the practitioners that went through all these surgeries with me, that went through these hospitalizations, that ruined my life. I went from a very active, highly functional person to a disabled person after years and years and years of this. I was like, you really weren't on this journey. And so I don't think you're seeing like the whole thing. No matter how much records I brought in, no matter how many things I said or did, I spent more time trying to say, I need this pain control. I simply need this treatment to function than I ever did talking about how we're going to handle all these, diseases, disorders, et cetera. How are we going to treat them? I'm happy to take opioids and also try a dietary approach. I'm happy to take opioids and also try a whole body approach, whether that be aerobics, et cetera. But I spent more time having to say, please don't take this away. Please don't take this away. Please don't judge me. Please don't threaten. Gastros are particularly aggressive about taking away opioid pain meds consistently. Before you even open your mouth, they're like, this is the problem. And I'm like, oh my gosh, except for I've had these issues before I was even on pain control. Again, I took like 12 to 15 years before I accepted it. Yes. I know it's become a
No,
really
you're good.
popular word, and at times it could be seen as being overused.
I just felt like,
I
as a
absolutely
physician,
do, and it just
I
happened
don't assign
recently. So, as someone
reputations
who's,
to
this is the
diseases
first
or to
anyone's going to hear of this with
medications,
me, I told you this
but
on the
to
email
hear
too, no one knows.
reputable
As
diagnosis.
someone who's been on stable, low dose opioids,
Did
I
she
am not
use
a
the word
high
of
dose
reputable?
patient, I am not like something that would throw up a red flag
That's
for over a
interesting.
decade.
Because you wouldn't
I was
necessarily
recently told by
associate
a
that in the
provider
medical
who cares
sense,
for me
different diseases having
that
different
pelvic pain,
reputations.
being because it
What do you
came from
think was
my
the logic behind
OBGYN,
that?
she could not write it for all of my diseases. She was the one who referred me to pain. Pelvic pain is no longer a reputable diagnosis for opioid pain control. The point I want to make on that is this provider had been prescribing under that exact diagnosis for 8 years. So how overnight does it go to a no longer reputable diagnosis that she was willing to prescribe under for 8 years? That felt very gaslighty. Yes. There are a few things that led up to this. I had a temporary increase due to a recent hospitalization and the developing of trigeminal neuralgia, which again, here I am again with my own issues where I'm trying to reject this diagnosis of trigeminal neuralgia, even though the MRA and the MRI show that it's there. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just like my brain is having trouble understanding that this is the nerve is messed up and that this might be a lifelong thing because I don't need anything else. But while I'm dealing with that, oh, I'm sorry, I got off track. Like, get me back to where you were. You had asked me a particular question and I kind of went off there.
Did you ever feel like you were being gaslit at that point by the physicians you're coming across?
Okay, yeah, that's right. The story about the temporary increase because of the hospitalization.
Is
I
in
think the other
association with a
thing that
certain
was stated
medication
on the, I should
leads me
have
to believe
pulled the
that there was
medical
something
record,
else
was that
besides just purely
opioids are no
clinical
longer
thought
seen
going
as
in the mind of that physician.
the chosen method for treating pelvic pain. That was the other statement on there. They are no longer considered to be the industry standard. And that felt very gaslighty to a stable patient. Like, whether they're the industry standard, we know exactly where the industry is at right now. She knows that I know where the industry is at. She knows what I do. She knows that I know everything. So very strange to look someone who is knowledgeable, who is educated, and who has really participated in my own healthcare and say, by the way, this is no longer an acceptable form of treatment for you. Why isn't it? So this temporary increase comes due to a hospitalization, and I gain even more functionality because I'm on a very low dose. So of course I'm advocating for myself when they try to take it away. And when I say temporary, I've now been on a temporary increase that was given to me. I did not advocate for this. It was offered to me during all of these flares. I've now been on it 9-10 months. Is that really temporary at that point?
As we know, and as
I've adjusted my whole life to it. So I am bartering at this point. I'm like, do we really have to reduce it? I'm stable. It's great. I'm perfect. And I have gone back to work. I haven't worked in 8 years. I am now working.
Because people don't understand just how subjective
I can't imagine why you would want to take someone off of that.
Do you feel like you're more dependent just because the dose increased? And sorry to be so blunt.
Please do. I would love the other side.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, not. No, I appreciate it. I am happy to share anything. I actually don't, because of the level that I'm on, and I have been without my medication before, and I've actually taken myself off before. I don't experience any kind of dependency issues. That doesn't mean somebody else wouldn't.
You know.
I think because of the sporadic way that I take them, I take them as needed. That has increased a little bit because I'm working right now.
Detaches
but
from the context.
I think because of that, it hasn't built like a consistent.
And so you're
and
always
again,
focusing
like,
on the medication.
I know we don't like to talk about dosage, but let's just say that I'm under 50 mme.
And
like,
that's
it's
why
not,
I wanted to phrase the
it's
question.
It's not
that
a ridiculous. It's all short actors. It's not
because that's how people in the medical community.
But here's the thing about having to defend that. I'm having to defend that.
Can
and this came up recently with a new provider I'm interviewing, and she says, well, I've heard this
the
before, if we have to
that
increase it, it isn't
working. If we
working
increase your opioid
coming from the physician's sense on that, and this is where I kind
of
held my
increase
own, as I said, great, so if you increase any medication, whether it be insulin or heart medication, does that mean
it's
not
working? And
when you
have these conversations, comparing like, opioids with other
or
medications
do, if it's not working,
in terms
do
of its
you
dosage,
it
side effects, how is that
like
received?
Instead of taking away, would you take heart medication away if you felt like you had to increase it?
Yeah.
Can I answer the first question really fast again in a different way? Mm-hmm. The question is, do I feel more dependent? I'd actually like to take that from a different side. I do. I am dependent upon these meds. I'm gonna try not to get emotional. I feel dependent because they give me a job again. I feel dependent because I can do more outside of the house. I feel dependent because everything in my life comes down to whether I'm lying on a bathroom floor with a heating pad screaming, or I can take my pain medication and participate
the
in the world.
Is,
I don't feel physically dependent, even though I still feel that that's
opioids
a known expected phenomenon for higher dose opioid patients that
have
if managed, isn't that
to work best
terrifying?
When
you tell me,
its
like,
value
it's a known phenomenon with how many medications.
Society.
Exactly.
Because I feel like you would be well equipped to answer them. What is the best line of logic that you've experienced?
I try. I mean, I entered the advocacy space because I felt alone. Every time I went to a pharmacy and a pharmacist would be rude if they were new and they didn't know. And they're always like, we have to call your doctor. And I'm like, why am I internalizing this if I'm not doing anything wrong? Because it's a weird phenomenon to have something that gives you functionality and healthcare and gives you your life back. And people are like, you don't need this. Why don't we give you an UA? Shouldn't I call your doctor? Are you sure this is a good medication? I mean, this is coming at pain patients from all sides. And let's not forget that that can also come from the public and their family and their friends. So you just have this nonstop narrative that you this should just, equally you know, important. Think your way through this pain. You shouldn't be on these medications. They're so damaging. They're so stressful. They can be. I fully acknowledge that. Some pain patients may develop substance use disorder. Some people will get opioids and it will trigger underlying substance use disorder. But again, that is not really something that can be controlled by the patient or even the physician. We act once we know that.
A diabetic is dependent on the insulin. Thank you for being
functionality
so honest
is the number
and so
one.
Straightforward. Because
and I often tell pain patients
something
doesn't always work
much
though.
Needed and
to
it's
me.
Refreshing to hear. That. And I'm just
it is
so
on us. There is
the
it is a give and take between
capacity.
Us and the physician because the physician is risking now. This is an environment where, and I have to tell them this because they're like, "But I need it," and they're not listening. And I was like, "I get that, and that's legitimate. They may listen if you come at it from this." Point because they are risking, unfortunately, it's just reality every time they take one of us on. You need to
I
make a journal,
find you to be unique,
demonstrate where you gain functionality. And one of the other things I also say, though, is not just on your opioids, show your physician everything you're doing to manage your pain. That includes therapy, psychiatry, walks,
let me,
taking a moment, whatever it is, whatever your limitations may be. Maybe you're not someone who can walk very far, but you take a moment on the couch to yourself and you say, at this moment, I had a high pain attack. I was able to breathe through this and I moved on. And then show them where you were not able to breathe through this and the opioids gave you your functionality back. So I tend to focus on that. Show them that you are trustworthy, that you are trying other options, and when your opioids are necessary, that they give you something back.
Is it as something else? No, is it fear that you see, or would you characterize? Yeah.
I would say if you are not there for pain treatment, so you're meeting with a physician that and you are not there for pain treatment and their focus and their immediate zone in, just boom, they don't ask you why you're there. They don't ask you what's going on with you. It's just, I see that you're on opioid pain control. Can you tell me why? If they zero in on that, the minute you walk in the door, they're probably going to be adversarial to you and you might want to pick somebody else because if you're there for like gallbladder problems and the first thing they zone in on and they start making you defend that before they talk to you about the reason you're there. And then they can talk about whether or not that is counterintuitive. If it's counterintuitive to your new disease, that's a reason to focus on it. But what I've seen with
still
a patient
there. Is what
she
is
walked in
like
and before she
now?
Even opened her mouth, they were like, we don't prescribe opioids just because she was there for a pain. Pain is a thing we should get, you know, examined, right? Before she opened her mouth, we don't prescribe. That is also alarming. That scares me every time. I'm like, wow. Patients aren't going to talk about their pain. In the provider. I do think there's a high level of fear. The provider I saw recently, though, still in residency, was, which is interesting because I asked for a provider who was willing to take on a pain patient, and she was like, "Yeah, she is." No, she's not. The first thing she said is, "Of course, I'm willing to take on a pain patient. Let's get you on Suboxone." Fear is part of it. Some of it is training at this point, because the younger physicians that came up in this hysteria, and like, I do agree that we probably did have some unnecessary opioids. We did have high prescribing rates. I do believe that we want to maintain a reasonable
subjective
treatment
plan in nature,
and not just have that. Like, how are we coming at everything in one degree or another?
Pontificating on what his or her
but
view
these
would
younger
be.
Physicians that I'm seeing, this is very scary.
Important question
she
to ask,
literally said to me,
"The
Suboxone is the number one
pain
killer."
A patient advocate, from your
so
perspective.
Fear, and now,
why do we have
I guess we're educating
designed,
in that manner? I mean, that's anecdotal,
quality
but that's, if you look at anybody's comments online, you'll see a lot of patients saying, "I'm being told that Suboxone is the best choice for surgery. I'm being told that Suboxone is the best choice." And it's just, but where does that come from? I think that comes from fear. Yeah. They're not risking anything by prescribing it.
Roland, I have an ask for you, actually, because I think the conference on pain, anesthesia, and all that. And
I would
my
say I was
topic
naive
is
before
implicit
pain
bias
management.
In the treatment.
I had relatively decent care, and I'm not saying I've never gaslit, and I'm not saying I never
week,
had a bad provider,
which is the largest,
I did.
But pain
overall, I was pretty well taken care of. Since pain management, it has just been a steady decline. I believe that I am never seen as the narrator in my own life. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I am never believed. And I think we don't always have to believe the patient. A lot of humans are very good at catching when somebody might be fibbing to them. But I think when a patient is legitimately consistent and unwavering, maybe we should believe them. They probably do know their life better than anybody else. I think it is slower. When I got the guidelines, the new guidelines, the night of, I annotated them. I pulled every single study. It's all level D evidence. It's all garbage. And when I read all of that, I spent like
I
4 days
go
doing
back
that.
To
and
one
I was
thing
like,
you
oh,
mentioned
gosh,
just for
this
the audience.
Evidence
when you
is
refer
horrible.
To level D
My heart sunk a little bit,
which is anecdotal or
I thought maybe we'd stop getting punitive tapers, but to be frank, I'm seeing a spike, including myself now. Like, I didn't have, nothing happened, by the way. Nothing punitive happened. I didn't do anything wrong. This is literally like, I just didn't want to go backwards. And here's the thing, I would have been willing to decrease back to my original amount, but that is not what they were doing to me. They said, pelvic pain is not enough. We are going to take you off of these. And I'm like, whew, out the door. I liked that provider too. This is ridiculous. I think it's going to move slow. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Exactly, well said. And with that, Vijay, thank you so much for your time.
So this is kind of I have a bunch pulled up right next to me, actually. This is kind of the thing that I like doing. I'm one of those boring people that sits around looking at the evidence.
Very well said.
So we don't have any funding. No. Think back even in any sense,
so
whether it be marine biology and otherwise. We used to have larger funding in
the
public space
pain management,
for people to say, yes, I do want to know why dolphins speak to each other on the second moon, right? We had more academic money. The money is all bought now. So Suboxone is going to fund a study to tell you that opioids doesn't work, or a hospital that wants to go opioid free because it gets money from somebody else will now fund a study to tell you opioids don't work. And like you're talking about, a lot of those studies are actually not studies. They are type D evidence. So they are simply anecdotal opinions from experts, but that doesn't
No, you're fine. I knew because with the water, I made me nervous from that, but as soon as you forgot about the water, you
were
rocking.
Taken to court using the CDC guidelines and prosecuted. At the same time, the CDC guidelines level of evidence should not hold up in a court of law. Like, I don't understand it.
It would be funny if the consequences weren't so tragic. Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's well said. With the remaining time that we have, for those who would be interested in getting a hold of you, learning more about your advocacy, or directly asking for your help, what's the best way that we can get
mainly through TikTok at VJ Gray. You'll find me right at VJ Gray on TikTok, and on there I have like my advocacy email and stuff. And I didn't mean for this to turn into the thing that it did, but I'm really glad I'm here. I've met amazing practitioners fighting the good fight, patients fighting the good fight, advocates,